Good day. This is Sheila Lammers with the Vermilion County News, dated Wednesday, February 8, 2017. We'll begin today's reading with an article from the Commercial News called Violet Takes Audience on Musical Journey. Director Jeannie Dunn describes Violet as the best little musical most of you have never heard of. DLO Musical Theater will present the award-winning and Tony-nominated Broadway musical on Friday through Sunday, February 17th through 19th, in Brimmer Auditorium at Danville Area Community College. The performance on February 17th will start at 7 p.m., featuring desserts only. Full dinner performances will be at 6:30 p.m. February 18th and at 12:30 p.m. February 19th. The dinner, served by the DAC Culinary Arts class, will consist of beef brisket or tilapia, sides, salad, and dessert. As for the show, if you're not a fan of musicals, you'll be pleasantly surprised with Violet. This is not a typical musical, Dunn said. For example, the music is unique in that there is a range of styles, including country, bluegrass, soul, gospel, rhythm and blues, rock, and amazing ballads, she said. The story revolves around Violet, a disfigured woman of unshakable faith who boards a Greyhound bus in Spruce Pines, South Carolina, to pursue her dream of beauty. The real journey takes place through the people she meets on the road, leading to a television preacher in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Set in 1964, themes of tragedy, racism, faith, and ultimately acceptance and love are all part of the story. The 14-member cast includes Mallory Williams Middendorf in the title role and Phil Bryant and Brian Jenkins as two young soldiers to whom Violet grows close. Dunn said all three are stellar, experienced performers who have strong followings in and beyond the community. In fact, she said, the entire cast is phenomenal. Jenkins, a student at DAC, said jokingly of his role, "I went from custom-made high heels for Rocky Horror Picture Show to 1960s army boots." Jenkins, as a heartthrob soldier, said he had to push different boundaries for Violet, but he enjoys it. His character, he said, is kind of clueless. He loves the girl, but doesn't realize it for a while. He has an awesome show-stopping solo, "Last Time I Came to Memphis," which he described as risque and a lot of fun to sing. "It's literally not your typical musical. It's not a Broadway-style show," Jenkins said. "With nonstop music," he said, "it's going to be amazing." Dunn described the show as a drama with bits of comedy. She embraced a minimalist vision for the production, simple costumes and a bare-bones set, so she could put the focus on the story, the characters, and the cast. Overall, she said of the play, "it's very powerful and it's very uplifting." Directing Violet has been Dunn's dream for 7 years. She fell in love with it after listening to the score. This is her second time partnering with music director Karen Grove. Other cast members are Ellis Mansfield as young Violet, Paul Strain as her father, Melanie Clark as old woman slash hotel hooker, Mark Leonard as the preacher, Ashley Bourne as Lulu slash Almeida, Natalia Bourne as lounge singer and bus passenger and gospel choirist, Craig Smith as radio singer, bus driver, and bus passenger, Brad Pollard as Virgil, radio singer, and bus driver, and Theodore Klein as Billy Dean, bus driver and radio singer. Gospel Choir and Pit Chorus features Kelly Carlton, Isabel Peters, Brittany McDaniels, Lauren Smith, and Haley Juhas. This is Dunn's third time as director for DLO, having done the Spitfire Grill and La Cage aux Folles. DLO Musical Theater, formerly known as Danville Light Opera, a nonprofit community theater, has been presenting Broadway-style adult and youth musicals in Vermilion County since 1956. Tickets for Violet may be purchased at www.dlomusicaltheater.com, and that theater ends with RE.com, or by calling the box office at 431-1660 by February 16th. No tickets will be sold at the door. Seating is limited, so early purchase is encouraged. DLO Musical Theater dessert dinner theater shows often sell out. Tickets are $25 for dessert only, $15 for students, and $37 for the full meal, $27 for students. Our next article is also from the Commercial News and is called Brat Pack Returns to Rock Out Against Rape. This Friday, the Palmer Arena will take a trip back to the 1980s for the third annual Rock Out Against Rape benefit show for the Vermilion County Rape Crisis Center. Champagne's Brat Pack will return as headliner for the concert Friday evening, playing classic tunes from the 80s era of music. Mike Ingram and New Souls will open the show. The band has members from both the Champaign and Danville areas. Marcy Sheridan, director, said she expects the show to be very fun and high energy. She also said Brat Pack played at the benefit show last year, kept the dance floor filled the entire time, and changed costumes multiple times throughout the set. The concert will take place from 7 to 11 p.m. Friday at David S. Palmer Arena at 100 West Main Street. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the opening act starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased at the Palmer Arena box office by calling 877-77-CLICK or online at http://palmerarena.com/roar-brat-pack. VIP tickets are $250 for a table seating 8 by the stage and dance area, and will include snacks, party favors, and a special name and sponsor of the table. VIP seating must be reserved by Thursday. Attendees also can dress in their totally awesome 80s outfit for a chance to win prizes in a costume contest. All proceeds help the Vermilion County Rape Crisis Center continue to provide free and confidential services to child and adult victims of sexual abuse. Services provided by VCRCC include individual, family, and group counseling, medical advocacy at the emergency department, legal advocacy in the criminal justice system, and prevention education programs in area schools and organizations. Sheridan said in April 2016, the state budget impasse left the agency in a crisis situation, and more than 50% of the budget, contracted through the state, was not getting paid. Their staff was cut back from 6 to 4 full-time employees and 1 part-time person. Since then, the stopgap budget passed later that year did provide a lifeline to the agency, Sheridan said. We were in a desperate situation before then because of the impasse, she added. However, the payment they received was about $40,000 less than what they expected and didn't arrive until September. But once they did receive it, they were able to rehire their prevention educator the next month. That position had been vacant for a year, Sheridan said. According to her, their prevention educator talks to local students about body safety and healthy relationships. However, relief from the stopgap budget was short-lived. Sheridan said that funding for their general revenue funding ended December 31st. From January 1st, the danger is that where they don't do something soon, we'll be right back in that dangerous situation, she said. Her agency also had to cut back counselors to part-time, and it normally has 3 full-time. According to Sheridan, the agency serves close to 150 victims and their significant others yearly through counseling and advocacy, and they provide programming to about 6,000 people in a normal year. Call the VCRCC office at 217-446-1337, visit vcrapecrisis.org, or visit the agency's Facebook page for further information. Sponsorship opportunities are also available. Now we'll read the high school confidential reports from the News Gazette, and we'll begin with one submitted by Roy Staple from Danville High School. Justin Doberis, Iowa Central, Colton Castong, McKendree, Jesse Drive Jr., and Daryl Kelly, Georgia Prep Sports Academy, Megan Burton, Eastern Illinois, and Josiah Heidel, Rose Holman, are among seniors to commit to further their athletic careers in college. From Georgetown Ridge Farm High School, student Mary Key wrote this, 3 chorus members, Isabella Brady, Jaden Cornell, and Marissa Hudson, are heading to Greenville College on Thursday to compete in the Greenville Choir Festival. From Oakwood High School, student Brooke Mercer wrote this, recent award winners include sophomore Samantha Weiss, Student of the Month, senior Bryce Moore, Character Trait Award for Patience, senior Kayla Thompson, Athlete of the Month, and Jeremy Dirksmeyer, Staff Member of the Month. From Westville High School, Student Joshua Kraus submitted this. First semester honor roll students were rewarded with donuts, milk, and coffee provided by the Westville Athletic Boosters. From Salt Fork High School, student Dawson LaBaugh wrote, auditions took place for You Can't Take It With You, a comedy about two feuding families that will take place April 21st through 22nd. It is the drama club's second play of the year. Faculty leader Lauren House said, I performed this play when I was in college, so I most likely will be more critical of how my students play their roles. I expect a solid performance and for them to bring it to life, but I do not want to recreate what I performed. I want my actors to put their own twist on the classic comedy. From Bismarck Henning High School, student Gina Russell wrote this. Friday's Pink Night culminated a week of fundraising for the Danville Cancer Center. The gym was decorated with pink streamers and luminaries in memory of those who have died of cancer. The school raised more than $2,400. The next article we'll read is called Danville's Rabbit Town Neighborhood. Can I Stay With You? And this is also from the News Gazette. Three of the four veterans who were displaced after a fire tore through their Danville home and took the life of one of their housemates last week are set to move back into their old neighborhood this week. Rob Mormon, who managed the house at 300 Park Street with his wife, said he has been preparing his home at 305 Park Street for the veterans with lots of help from businesses and individuals who are donating their services and materials for the project. The house is across the street from the fire-damaged one. If all goes as planned, the veterans will move into the home on Thursday. This is their home, Mormon said, of the Rabbit Town neighborhood on the city's south side. They want to be back here. The cause of the fire, which started shortly before noon, February 2nd, is still under investigation, according to the Illinois State Fire Marshal's office. An investigator said it may take another 3 to 4 weeks before the inquiry is complete. The sprawling two-story house at 300 Park is owned by Mormon's uncle, Kevin Macon, of Florida. Mormon's mother, Pamela Bellick, managed it and cared for the veterans for 23 years until her death in 2009. They were like mom's children, Mormon said, adding that at one time at least 20 veterans lived in the house, which was divided into separate living areas. The number dwindled as the occupants passed away or moved on. After Bellick's death, Mormon, his wife Jacqueline, and his brothers managed the home. Later, it was just Mormon and his wife. Mormon said his wife was at the house 45 minutes before the fire broke out. She had just given them their medications and had served them their breakfast, he said. He was running errands at the time, but returned to the house after several neighbors called him about the fire. He was devastated to learn that one of the men, David R. Singleton, had died. His body was found in a bathroom. He had a good heart, Mormon said, of the 75-year-old former Evansville, Indiana man who moved into the house in 2005 to be closer to the Veterans Affairs Ileana healthcare system. Mr. Singleton was an Army veteran and a retired clockmaker. He left behind a wife and daughter. While the home was not affiliated with the VA, the medical center assisted in finding temporary housing for the four other displaced veterans. One moved to Indiana to be closer to his family, two moved into a local hotel, and one is staying at the Danville Veterans Hospital. They cried because their home was gone, Mormon recalled of the men, who ranged from ages 57 to 75 and represent different branches of the military. They thought they would live here for the rest of their lives. All they asked was, "Can I stay with you?" That house, which is now boarded up, is unlivable. Mormon said he doesn't know what his uncle plans to do with it at this time. He said he and his wife regard the veterans as extended family, so they started working on getting their home across the street ready for the veterans to move into. He credited a veterans advocate from Georgetown, who goes by the name of Mohawk Man, for stepping in, finding businesses to donate their services, and coordinating the efforts. The house, at the corner of Park Street and Bryan Avenue, is in good shape, but the pipes froze and burst over the winter, so the house didn't have running water. An Aqua Illinois crew has been running a new service line to the house from the water main, said Bob Irvin, Aqua's area manager in Danville. He said the water company put the project at the top of its to-do list and is doing the work free of charge. Given the circumstances, we wanted to be able to assist with what's going on, Irvin said. These guys served our country and protected us, so we have all of the rights that we have. We felt it was the right thing to try to get them back into a home. Others who have donated their services include MB Outdoor Services, Bean Plumbing and Bean and Son Sewer Service, all of Champaign, Contractor Jim McLaughlin, a retired Marine Sergeant from Mahomet, Big R Rentals of Danville, and Hometown Hearst Company from Battle Creek, Michigan. Others, including the family of fallen Army Sergeant Kenneth G. Nichols of Georgetown, who was killed in Afghanistan in 2009, have donated clothing and household items. Mormon said the veteran who moved back to Indiana wants to stay there and find an apartment. The others will move into their new home this week. They will be escorted to the home by members of the Illinois Patriot Guard Riders and Danville police cars and a fire truck. Area residents are being asked to line Park Street for their arrival between 4:30 and 5 p.m. Our next piece from the News Gazette is called Project Success of Vermilion County, Teen Reach Returning After Absence. After a 1.5-year hiatus, Teen Reach, that which stands for Responsibility, Education, Achievement, Caring, and Hope, is back in Hoopston. The after-school program, which is being run by Project Success of Vermilion County, is free and available to 40 Hoopston schools, 5th to 8th grade students. Program Director Kimberly David said 30 spots are still available. Teen Reach will run from 3:15 to 6:15 p.m. weekdays through May 26th and 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. weekdays from May 30th to June 30th at the Hoopston Multi-Agency at 206 South 1st Avenue. Participants will receive a daily snack during the school year and a daily lunch during the summer. Teen Reach provides students with additional academic support and enrichment activities aimed at helping them be successful in life. Enrichment programs will include science experiments, technology projects, art, nutrition, music, sports, recreation, 4-H, and programs for the entire family. Students also get a chance to go on occasional field trips, including Holiday World and Splash and Safari. Project Success also runs the program at Mary Miller Junior High in Georgetown and the Danville Housing Authority. For more information, contact Angela Cooper or Anita Garcia at 217-283-5544. Now it's time to read the area obituaries, and we'll begin with those listed in the News Gazette. Stephen C. Brown, 35, of Danville, passed away at 12:02 p.m. Sunday, February 5th, in Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 11th, at Robeson Chapel in Catlin, with Pastor David Wickens officiating. Burial will be in Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Memorials may be made to the charity of the donor's choice. Online condolences may be offered at robesonchapel.com. Gary Howard, 69, of Vetersburg, Indiana, died on Saturday, February 4th at St. Vincent Hospital in Indianapolis. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Sunset's Covington Chapel at 420 3rd Street, Covington, Indiana. Stephen Lay, 65, of Danville, died at 4:55 p.m. Saturday, January 28th at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Rortvet Funeral Services at 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Hedwig Pedrazzoli, 83, of Danville, died at 7:54 a.m. Tuesday, February 7th at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Pape Family Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Michael C. Upperman, Sr., 76, of Danville, passed peacefully from this life on Thursday, February 2nd at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. Per his wishes, he will be cremated, and there will be no services. Burial will be in Sunset Memorial Park. Jean Walsh, 91, of Covington, Indiana, died Monday, February 6th at the Senior Center in Covington, Indiana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Pape Family Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Robert Carl Mattson, Great Dad, successful businessman, and grill master extraordinaire, passed away peacefully at his home in Evergreen, Colorado, on January 27th at the age of 63. He was the son of the late Dr. A. Rhys Matson and Anne Dusenberry Matson, and was born in Danville. As per his request, there will be no funeral, but a memorial celebration is scheduled in Evergreen at a later date. Please visit evergreenmemorialpark.com for further details. Memorial contributions may be made to the American Cancer Society, Salvation Army, or to the DAC Foundation. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the commercial news. Michael L. Jennings, 64, of Eddyville, Illinois, and formerly of Rossville, passed away Thursday, February 2nd at 9:17 p.m. at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis from complications of a six-month battle with leukemia. He was born in Danville, the son of Roscoe and Vivian Goss Jennings. There will be no services. Memorials in his name may be sent to Project Hope Humane Society at P.O. Box 125, Metropolis, Illinois, 62960. You may leave an online condolence at alyfh.com. Carol Ann Sims, 59, of Normal, passed away at 8:26 p.m. Sunday, February 5th, at her home with her family by her side. She was born in Danville, the daughter of Roy, known as Whitey Howard, and Margaret Carol Hatfield Sims. A celebration of Carol Ann Sims' life will be held at 12 p.m. Thursday, February 9th at First Christian Church in Hoopston. Burial will follow the service in Floral Hill Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. this evening at Beck Memorial Home, 209 East Grove Street, Bloomington, Illinois, and from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Thursday, February 9th at First Christian Church in Hoopston. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Community Cancer Center, 407 East Vernon Avenue, Normal, Illinois, 61761, or to Advocate Broman Hospice Program at 1322 South Main Street, Normal, Illinois, 61761. The family has entrusted Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston to assist them in honoring Carol's life. Now we'll carry on with the local news from the commercial news. Our next article is called Council Talks Casino, New City Budget. Alderman heard Mayor Scott Eisenhower give an update on state expanded gambling talks at Tuesday night's Danville City Council meeting, including a possible amendment for a casino here to be land-based and not have it be over water. In response, Ward 2 Alderman Dan Dungeon said the casino could be located at the old Kmart site along North Vermilion Street. Eisenhower has been traveling to Springfield as gambling expansion remains part of legislation some have nicknamed the Grand Bargain as revenue talks continue on a state budget compromise. The proposal includes a land-based casino in Chicago and riverboat casinos in Danville, Lake County, Rockford, the south suburbs of Chicago, and in Williamson County in southern Illinois, as well as permitting slot machines at horse racing tracks at Arlington Heights, Cicero, and Collinsville. I thought testimony went well, Eisenhower said, about the talks in the Senate. Officials have said a casino here would mean about 600 construction jobs, 800 permanent jobs, $30 million annually in revenue, $5 million annually in new taxes for the city just from the casino itself, with more revenue expected from the sales tax, liquor tax, hotel, motel, and food and beverage taxes. I think that resonates, Eisenhower said. 65% of the revenue is expected to come from Indiana residents. Eisenhower said there's some optimism the bill could pass the Senate, but he said he's heard zero talk about it in the House and having the legislation move forward. Eisenhower said again the city would not build the casino, not own it, and not own the license. The casino's location would be selected by the Illinois Gaming Board, the city, and the license holder, an outside company. The city likely would have to pay for infrastructure, such as if a roadway was needed to get to the casino. Construction would take about 12 months, and there can be a temporary casino opened prior to the permanent one opening. Also Tuesday, the council heard a discussion on solid waste fees will come back to aldermen in March. In a budget study session regarding the city's new budget to start May 1st, Alderman heard Eisenhower talk about an initially projected $1.6 million needed in budget cuts or revenue. That's the magic number, the amount needed today, Eisenhower said. That is merely only a starting number. That amount is due to about $850,000 in projected revenue decreases being seen in state sales tax, state income tax, corporate replacement tax, and home rule sales tax. Other revenue is up, such as video gaming, liquor, and the food and beverage tax. Holiday sales tax numbers haven't been included in the revenue projections. Increased city budget expenditures of about $1.9 million from a year ago are coming from the early retirement incentive payment, transfers to the police and fire pensions, the public safety building lease, firefighter overtime, and street lights. Some budget savings are occurring through health insurance, general liability, sales tax increase, and bond debt transfer. Final action on a new budget will come in April. Now we'll turn to VermilionCountyFirst.com for another article called Aqua Illinois Water Improvements on Tap. Motorists who got accustomed to a major waterline project along North Vermilion Street last summer will see Phase 2 work begin this spring. Bob Irvin, regional manager for Aqua Illinois Water Company, says the work will run north from the Lakeshore Drive area. "We want to try to get an early start on it, if at all possible," says Irvin. "We have to make sure the freezing is completed, as we have temporary service lines laying on top of the ground there, but we want to jump on it early." Irvin added the project will be similar to work that was done along North Vermilion Street last year. "We're going to have a little over 1 mile of new plastic, if you will, pipe within a pipe, along that stretch all the way up to Poland Road. We're looking to try to get that off and running very quickly in the spring," added Irvin on the program. And Irvin says the new plastic liner that will be going inside the existing 8-inch cast iron pipe should adequately serve the area for maybe 40 to 60 years. Meanwhile, Irvin says Aqua is looking at future improvements to the Lake Vermilion Dam. "It was constructed in 1925, and we do work on it every year. We do some concrete work on the deck. We look at the gates. But some of those things come to the end of their useful life. You can only repair and weld and do some of those maintenance items so long, and then you need to replace," added Irvin. "And so the next 3 to 5 years, we're taking a real hard look at our dam operation, and we'll be making some improvements." Irvin discussed Aqua Illinois Water's capital improvements on WDAN Radio's Newsmakers program Tuesday. He added, "Hopefully, the investments the company is making in new water mains will help reduce repair costs in the future." I do have one event announcement to share before we close. Georgetown Volunteer Fire Department will be having their annual Pancake Sausage Breakfast at the Georgetown Fire Department on February 11th. Serving time will be from 6:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. This event includes the famous whole hog sausage patties and fresh pancakes and is a free will donation event. Sausage will be available for purchase the day of the event. If you have any questions, please contact Fire Chief Jeff Bridgewater at 217-918-9604. This has been Sheila Lammers with the Vermilion County News, dated Wednesday, February 8, 2017. I hope you stay warm today, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.